Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. This is podcast number 54 for Wednesday, November 23rd, 2011, and I'm Ben Stone. Regular listeners will know that typically on Wednesday, Kai is with me, and we record the podcast together, and we kind of bounce things off each other. Of course, regular listeners will also know that I am on the road, and Kai is back in Ohio, and so therefore it's not all that convenient to have our typical Wednesday podcast with us working together on that. And for the new listeners, or if this is your first time listening, I suppose that would make you a new listener, wouldn't it? Kai is my daughter, and we typically try to do one podcast a week with both of us together, and then the others are either audio articles that one or the other have written or podcasts that I do on my own. So with me being on the road again or still and away from Ohio, I'm here in the motorhome as I have been for the last few podcasts. So a quick disclaimer, we're probably going to have background noise. It's probably we're going to be interrupted. I believe yesterday's podcast, we had a train go through in the middle of the podcast. We had to pause and wait till it went by. And I say we, even though Kai is not with me, I'm not here alone. Baggy the cat is with me, and Nikki the dog is with me here in the motorhome. In addition to traffic going by, and as I said, we might have a train with us in the podcast. So what I wanted to talk about today is something quite a few people are talking about, and I hope that I'll be able to bring a slightly different angle to it. I hope that I'm not just going to bring you a rehashed version of the same thing everybody else is saying. Otherwise, what would be the purpose of listening to me ramble on and not listen to someone else? So, presidential candidate, Republican, longtime representative from Texas, Ron Paul, was on, I believe that was Sunday, was on CBS, what is the name of that? CBS Face the Nation with Bob Schaefer. Now, there's a lot of liberty-minded folks and Ron Paul supporters who are looking at Bob Schaefer and shaking their head and going, you know, what a statist shrill. What an absolute statist shrill. What a clueless idiot. Some of them are saying these things. Let me defend Bob just slightly. Good old Bob. Yes, Bob is a statist shrill, as are all mainstream media personalities. He did not research Ron Paul's position on anything, of course, because he's not an actual journalist. He's a on-air personality. That means he doesn't have to have a brain, he doesn't have to think, he doesn't research anything. He just says whatever they put in front of him and translates it the best he can, considering his limited skills. Now, you think I'm attacking Bob Schaefer? Let's see. Hold on one second. Look at my notes and make sure I get the man's name right. Yeah, Schaefer. You're going to think that I'm attacking Bob because he was the way he handled Ron Paul. Not necessarily. I would give the same attack to pretty much anybody in the mainstream media because they're all brainless clowns. I recall, this is one of my favorite stories when talking about the media. Back in the early 1990s, we were living just south of Columbus, Ohio, in a small town. And I was working for a public utility, a water company. And it came about the time of the season when they're running the time trials at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in preparation for the Indianapolis 500. And so they were running the time trials day after day, and so you would get the news updates of who had run a time trial that day and what their performance was like and so forth. And this is the typical fluff stories that the sports people come up with to try to keep people interested in a non-event like the time trials of the Indianapolis 500. So I was home for lunch one day, and the television was on, and the local news was playing, and their midday, their sports personality for the local news was running a story about the Indianapolis 500 time trials. And they showed this standard issue clip that obviously came from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway had obviously provided this clip to a variety of news agencies, probably the AP or whatever, and then it got out to all the rest of the news agencies. But it was a standard clip that was issued by the raceway, and it was a down close to the ground shot coming out of a curve so that you could see a race car. Well, first off, you could see the trail on the track where, as the time trials had progressed, all of the cars are pretty much riding in the same sweet zone. If you're unfamiliar with time trials, it's where the race car driver will take his car out by himself, just one car on the track, and he will get the best laps possible, and that will determine his positioning in the beginning of the race. So as race car after race car after race car does their time trials, you begin to get a black streak on the raceway itself, where every single car is following the same path. It's sort of the sweet spot of the track. It's where you get the most efficient traction and the most efficient laps that you can as you go round and round the track. So you get this black streak that's right in that sweet spot, where every single car has gone almost tire to tire in the exact same tracks, because you want to get the best spot possible. So in this very standard shot, the camera's down low and it's shooting at the exit of the curve, so that you see the race car coming around through the curve, riding right in that sweet spot in that darkened trail. And he comes zipping right past the camera, so you get the really dramatic effect of the race car coming past the camera really fast, and you have the Doppler effect sound with the race car zipping by and everything. Very dramatic. It was a wonderful shot. What you might expect as a publicity shot from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And so I'm there at home at lunch, and the news is playing, and the local sports person shows this clip and tells who was in their time trials today and what kind of speeds that they achieved and so forth. And then I went back to work. I wasn't really paying attention to the Indianapolis time trials anyway, but it was on and I was sitting there eating lunch. So I went back to work and didn't think anything more about it. I came home from work that evening, and again, the television was on, and they were showing the local news, and the local sports guy was saying his little routine that he does, and it's that they have a different sports guy from the lunch sports guy to the evening sports guy, so there's a different sports guy talking, and he shows the same clip, exact same clip, of the car coming around the corner, and the car exits, right past the camera, and you have the Doppler effect sound, and it's very dramatic, and he's talking about who was in the time trials that day and so forth. And I didn't pay much attention because, again, I didn't care. So as the evening progressed, the late night news came around, and I can't remember if it was the 10:30 news or the 11 o'clock news or whatever. But I'm sitting there and I'm watching, and they don't have a late night sports person. The lady that does the weather covers the sports at the late news like that. And clearly, her expertise is not in sports. I don't know. It doesn't take a whole lot to be the weather person of a TV station. It's all about personality and everything, anyway, and appearance. But for whatever reason, she covered sports. I can't recall now if she regularly covered sports at the late night or if it was just the one-time thing or whatever. But clearly she had reviewed the clip of the car coming around the corner. And so as she describes, she says that the time trials, she uses all the right terminology, the time trials are happening at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And she says, she reads the names, because she's got the print there, so she reads the names and she reads, you know, what their positions were and so forth. And then she shows the clip of the car coming around the corner, the curve. Now, clearly, and again, this has already been, this exact same clip has already been shown twice in the same day, and I've observed it both times. And clearly the car is riding in exactly that perfect sweet spot, which, as it comes around a curve, of course that takes it really close to the wall, because that's the best spot as it goes around that curve. But also, clearly, she had no clue what she was looking at. So when she saw this clip of the car coming around the curve, she thought the point was that the car almost crashed because it came so close to the wall. Well, it didn't. All of the cars were taking the same path. You could tell by the scarring on the roadway, the black streak on the roadway. But she didn't know that. So she made a big deal out of this near-miss accident where the car narrowly missed hitting the wall, and there was almost a tragedy at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway today as this race car almost hit the wall. And of course, she was entirely mistaken. She had no clue what she was talking about. And I sat there watching that, and I thought, you know, that's a good example of everything you see in the news. They don't have a clue. Typically, mainstream media news people are individuals who have a good voice, have the appearance that is useful for whatever purpose they serve in the news media, and they can say, they can repeat whatever's spoken into their ear, and they can say whatever they read on a teleprompter or on a newsprint. That's the entirety of their requirements. They do not have to be intelligent. They do not have to have the slightest clue about what real life is like. They don't even need to know about the topic of which they speak. And that's mainstream media. That's the news. That's what you get from them. And it doesn't matter if you're listening to Bill O'Reilly, or if you're listening to Bob Schaefer, or if you're listening to the chatty morning folks with their drinking coffee and talking back and forth. It's all the same. They're idiots. They are there because of their smile and their voice. And unfortunately, lots of Americans believe everything they say as if it were truth. So when I'm attacking Bob Schaefer here, understand that I'm not attacking an individual. I'm attacking an entire industry that hires airheads to come out and present to us propaganda, because that's really all it is. It's propaganda that's handed out by a very small group of people that are actually just tools of the state. And once again, in case you're a new listener, let me define the difference between what is the state and all the things that we typically think of as being the bad guys. First off, government is not the state. Government is government. Now, governments can behave as a state. Governments can be influenced as a state. Governments can be a state according to their behavior. But the state is much bigger than a government. The state also includes things like the banking industry. The banking industry exists because the government uses force and aggression to create a place for them to exist. If there were an open free market, we would have banks, but we would not have fractional reserve banking and central banking would not take place, because the free market would drive them out. People would choose real banking, honest banking, rather than fractional reserve banking, because fractional reserve banking is theft. Also, central banks like the Federal Reserve would not exist in a free market. The only reason the Federal Reserve exists is because the force of the state, the aggression of the state by using the government, creates the Federal Reserve. And somebody might argue, oh, well, the Federal Reserve is not federal. The Federal Reserve is a private company. Yeah, exactly. A private company that exists because the government says it can exist and the force of the state makes a place for it. What about corporations? Corporations exist because of the force of the state, because the government passes laws that give certain corporations advantages and monopolies, and therefore they exist. Without the force and aggression of the state, there would be no massive corporations, there would be no central banks, there would be no fractional reserve banking, and government would be free. Government would be competitive. Okay, so that's kind of off my main point, but in addition to the fact that corporations and fractional reserve and central banks are part of the state, the media is part of the state. The mainstream media exists because of advantages given to it by the state. If you don't believe that, try being a freelance reporter without your credentials and walk up and see if you can ask the president something, or see if you can get a seat at a major news conference of any kind without the proper credentials issued by the state. The state creates the monopoly of the mainstream media, just like the state creates the monopoly in the medical industry. The state creates the monopoly for the pharmaceutical industry. The state creates the monopoly in the public utilities industry. All of these are aspects of the state because there is no free market. They are not aspects of the market. They're part of the state. So the state is bigger than the government. Okay, so let's get back to Bob Schaefer and his empty-headedness. I want to read for you real quick some of the questions that Bob Schaefer threw at Ron Paul. First he says, this is Bob Schaefer's question. You believe 9/11 happened because of actions the United States took? And then Ron Paul said, basically, well, yeah, that's what the 9/11 Commission said. That's what the CIA said. That's what the State Department said. That's what... And he starts going through this. And Bob Schaefer just blows out of, well, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, Ron Paul is a very polite gentleman, and he did not pursue the point. But Bob Schaefer basically said, well, I'd have some objections to their conclusions. Well, the smart thing to do at that point would be to say, what specific objections do you have to the 9/11 Commission's report? Turn it right back on the questioner. See, because what's happening is, oh, well, I'll get to that in a minute. Let's read some more of Bob Schaefer's questions. So Ron Paul says basically that, yeah, the 9/11 happened because the United States government was interfering in a lot of other countries, and people got mad at us, and so they took this action. And Ron Paul says, essentially, you know, it's dangerous to believe the lie that the only reason they attacked us is because they hate us because of our freedoms. Well, that's a stupid argument, and I have no idea how people can buy such a shallow, silly thing. But, you know, okay. So then Bob Schaefer follows back up and he says, "What you're saying is it's America's fault." And of course, he's created a straw man argument there, and it's very clear when he does this, and Ron Paul very politely shuts him down and doesn't do a bad job. Then Bob Schaefer goes on and says, "Am I correct that your idea of how to discourage Iran from building nuclear weapons is to be nicer to Iran's leaders?" Well, of course, here we see very clearly that Bob Schaefer has no idea what Ron Paul, at where he stands or what he's actually said in dealing with Iran. This is entirely some kind of, this is the kind of question someone would say if they had no idea at all what Ron Paul stood for and they only read internet chat of people who hated Ron Paul. Then you would ask a question like that. And so then Ron Paul talks to him. And he says, Ron Paul says, we shouldn't be talking about bombing Iran. We should be talking about negotiating with Iran. And so Bob Schaefer interrupts Ron Paul and says, no one has suggested in the U.S. government that we're going to bomb Iran. What they have said is that we will impose tough sanctions. Now, it's a funny thing, because when Bob Schaefer is talking about the actions of the United States government prior to 9/11, he assumes that the actions of the government are also the actions of all of America. In other words, it's America's fault that they attacked us. That's his accusation against Ron Paul. And yet, when we switch this around and we say, no one has suggested that the U.S. government, that we should bomb Iran. Well, yeah, that talk is going constantly everywhere in America. I mean, there's a lot of talk about whether we should bomb Iran. In 2008, I seem to recall a certain presidential nominee, Republican, who actually sang the song, Bomb, 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 Bomb Iran. And he was a seated senator when he was singing that song. You can't get much more the government saying it than that, unless you actually have the president saying he's going to bomb Iran, which the president has kind of indicated that that's what he would do under the right circumstances, as has the last president, and the president before that, and the president before that, and the president before that, and the president before that. We have continually threatened to bomb Iran going all the way back into the 70s. We've never done it, but we've threatened it, and we've bombed Iran's neighbors. As a matter of fact, we've invaded two of Iran's neighbors. That's pretty aggressive. In addition to that, as Ron Paul points out in this interview, sanctions are, in many times throughout history, sanctions have been considered an act of war. Blockades are considered an act of war. And we have both blockaded and sanctioned Iran at times. So then, let's get back to the point here. So Bob Schaefer wants to have it both ways. He wants it so that when the government does something, that's the same as all of America doing it. But when all of America is doing something, that's different than when the government's doing it. So all America can talk about bombing Iran, but it's not the government. But when the government goes over and actually bombs Iraq, or when the government goes over and interferes with other countries, or puts bases in Saudi Arabia, or does any of the number of things that it's done in foreign countries, that's the American people doing that, see? That's the Bob Schaefer way of thinking. That's the mainstream media way of thinking. And unfortunately, I'm going to get to this in a minute, that's how most Americans think. Okay. Let's get on to the next question. Do you think, this is Bob Schaefer's questions again, do you think there's any place in the world where the United States forces should be stationed? And then Ron Paul talks about submarines, and Bob follows up with the question, so if you were president, would you bring home the troops from Japan, the troops from South Korea? Now, it's fortunate that for Bob Schaefer that Ron Paul is a very polite man. I'm not polite, and if he were to say that to me, I would say, you know, Bob, Japan is not at war with us anymore. That war is over, and so is the one in Korea. Korea's war has been over for about 60 years, and the war with Japan has been over for about 65 years. Don't you think we can trust him by now? I mean, I would put it to Bob just like that. Bob, are you afraid of the Japanese? Bob, is that why we have to have troops stationed all over Japan? Bob, we have troops in Germany. Are you afraid the Germans are going to attack us? Bob, why do we have troops in Germany? Bob, I'm pretty sure the war is over, even the Cold War, that was the excuse for the last 50 years, is over, Bob. That's what I would do. But then again, I'm not polite. Ron Paul was polite with him. Okay, so his next question, and this is the one that I really wanted to get to. Bob Schaefer says, "Your plan to get the country back on a firm financial footing is to close, among other things," and he starts this list. Okay, you ready for this? You'll probably hear my mouse clicking. I want to get this right. "Is to close, among other things, the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, Commerce, Interior, Housing and Urban Development, and would cut back the federal workforce by 10%. You've also suggested we should close FEMA." Oh, no, not the holy FEMA. Don't close the holy FEMA. All humanity would cease without the holy FEMA. They did such a bang-up job in Katrina, didn't they? Tearing up things and destroying stuff and, like, beating up old ladies and shooting people who were walking on a bridge. Yeah, yeah, FEMA did a great job. How could we exist without FEMA? And so then Bob follows up, doesn't even let really Ron Paul answer the question. Bob follows up with this. He says, "I have to ask you this. What would you do about all the things that those agencies control, run, supervise? For example, what happens to the national parks if you close the Department of Energy? Do we just let them go by the by?" Okay, so then Ron Paul answers him and talks to him and tries to clarify. But Bob is not listening. Bob doesn't hear a thing. You know, I'm reminded of the old Cheech and Chong song, and it kind of applies to Bob Schaefer and all his type. The Cheech and Chong song goes, "My mama talking to me, try to tell me how to live, but I don't hear nothing because my brain is like a sieve." Bob Schaefer's brain is like a sieve, as is most of America. The things that Ron Paul says just go right through. And that takes us to an example that was given us a long time ago, and a lesson that we as libertarians should have learned a long time ago. And it's something that I can pretty much guarantee Ron Paul read a long time ago and knows, probably close to knowing it by heart. And that is the works of a certain gentleman named Frédéric Bastiat. Now let me read to you what Frédéric Bastiat said. And I want you to think about Bob Schaefer's questions and the ridiculousness of Bob Schaefer's questions as you hear the words of Frédéric Bastiat. And this is from something like, I'm sorry I didn't look it up, but I'm pretty sure it's something around the 1850s when he wrote this. Mid-1800s. It may not have been the 1850s, but mid-1800s when Frédéric Bastiat wrote this. And he says this. "But by deduction..." Bastiat's words. "But by a deduction as false as it is unjust, do you know what economists are accused of?" And of course, he's talking about us, essentially, even though we're not economists, but that's who he's talking about. Those who are libertarian-minded, or in those days, he was referring to people who had a mind to control the wasteful spending of the government rather than just giving it a free check and just letting it go. Okay, so he says this. "Do you know what we're accused of? It is that when we disapprove of government support..." Hold on, you're going to hear my mouse again. "When we disapprove of government support, we are supposed to disapprove of the thing itself whose support is discussed, and to be the enemies of every kind of activity because we desire to see those activities, on the one hand, free, and on the other, seeking their own reward in themselves. Thus, if we think that the state should not interfere by taxation in religious affairs, we are atheists. If we think the state ought to..." Oops, I read it wrong, sorry. "If we think the state ought not to interfere by taxation in education, we are hostile to knowledge. If we say that the state ought not, by taxation, to give a fictitious value to land, or to any particular branch of industry, are we enemies of property or labor? If we think that the state ought to support Oops ought not to support artists. Are we barbarians who look upon the arts as useless? And then, I'm sorry for my clumsy reading of Bastiat, but then he goes on to say, against such conclusions as these, I protest with all my strength. Far from entertaining the absurd idea, far from entertaining the absurd idea of doing away with religion, education, property, labor, and the arts, when we say that the state ought to protect the free development of all these kinds of human activity, without helping some of them at the expense of others, we think, on the contrary, that all these living powers of society would develop themselves more harmoniously under the influence of liberty, and that under such an influence, no one of these, as is now the case, be a source of trouble, of abuse, of tyranny, and of disorder. Our adversaries consider that an activity which is neither aided by supplies nor regulated by the government is an activity destroyed. We think just the contrary. Their faith is in the legislator, not in mankind. Ours is in mankind, and not in their legislator. So, what Bastiat was telling us, again, this is the mid-1800s, is that these statists, these people who cling to the state, these people who expect the state to provide all things for them, these people who look to the state to be their savior under from all things bad, these people think that if we don't want the government to do it, we don't want it done at all. It's an absurdity. I don't know how many times I've been discussing something with someone, and they've made a leap from the government shouldn't do this to it shouldn't be done at all. Or the government shouldn't regulate this item, therefore everyone should have it, or everyone should do this. This is the great confusion that the statists have over the drug prohibition. They think if you say, well, the drug prohibition is a massive waste of money, it's immoral, it's none of the government's business, it's not something that we should involve ourselves in, then immediately they think you believe that all babies should be injected with heroin or some ridiculously stupid thing like that. They think children should be given drugs. It's such a leap in that logic just fails to provide an answer as to how people can be this stupid. And yet they are. And this is not new. Bastiat showed us all those years ago that this is the tendency of those that depend on the state. Now, I'm going to go back to something Frank Charteroff said way back in the mid-60s. And I'm going to horribly paraphrase what he said. But essentially, he says, you can't teach libertarians. You can't teach someone about liberty if they don't already understand it. All any of us can do is discover other libertarians. And this goes really to something I've written about before, and something I probably ought to do a separate article on. But really and truly, there are two kinds of human beings. And as we progress into the future, this divide is going to be more and more apparent. There are those who believe that we have to have a state to regulate human activity and to decide for us what is right and what is wrong and what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And there are those who believe that each individual human being understands right and wrong, and each individual human being should be responsible for their own actions. Now, this divide is very apparent when you see how someone deals with somebody like Ron Paul. When a person hears Ron Paul, they either hear one of two things. They either hear a crazy old man talking about killing away all the things that keep us safe, the state, or they hear a man saying, you know what, the state is broke. The government is run out of money. We can't continue to do all these things we've done around the world for the last 100 years. We can't continue to do these things because we don't have an unlimited supply of funding. People hear Ron Paul in one of those two lights. And those that hear him as a crazy old man who says, we have to kill all the military. We can't have any military. People who hear that kind of nonsense when Ron Paul speaks, you're never, ever, ever, ever going to convince them. It doesn't matter how many facts you lay out in front of them. If they hear Ron Paul talk, and they think Ron Paul wants, how was it? Bob said this. So if you were, no, that's the other one. Am I correct that your idea of how to discourage Iran from building nuclear weapons is to be nicer to Iran's leaders? Anybody who is that simplistic in their mind, when they hear Ron Paul talk about foreign policy, and they can jump to that kind of conclusion, they're a lost case. Now, this brings us to the futility of supporting Ron Paul for president. Now, everything I've said so far, Ron Paul supporters are going to love hearing it from me, except what I just mentioned. The futility of supporting Ron Paul for president, and the futility of sending money to support Ron Paul for president. You see, the vast majority of Americans are in the camp with Bob Schaefer. They hear Ron Paul, but it goes right through because their brain is like a sieve. And all they hear is a crazy old man saying that he wants to get rid of the military and he wants to play nice with all the bad guys and he wants to completely leave America wide open so that all the evil people in those foreign countries will come and kill us and take all of our stuff. That's what they hear when Ron Paul speaks. Because in their simplistic little mind, they can't imagine living a life without the state constantly telling them what to do, constantly protecting them, constantly supplying for them all of their needs. They can't imagine a world where those things are not present, where the state is not doing these things for them. They can't imagine how there could be a park if there's no government, if there's no state robbing from someone to pay the park attendants to handle it. Yesterday I talked about the difference in roadside rests, state-operated roadside rests, and privately operated campgrounds. And I talked about the difference in the bathrooms. If you go into a roadside rest, you might find a clean bathroom, but the odds are you're going to find a lot of really nasty graffiti in there, and there's a good likelihood you're going to find a very dirty bathroom. But I think pretty much every private campground that I recall ever staying in had clean bathrooms, had clean showers, had clean facilities, and the people were polite. How often are state workers polite? How often are employees of the government on any level polite? We pulled into one, I should have said this yesterday on yesterday's podcast, but we pulled into one campground one time, and I'll even mention the name of it. It's been a while since we've been there, but we pulled into this campground called the Ladybug Campground, and it was right off of I-44 going through Missouri. It's about, somewhere about central southern Missouri. And as we pulled into the campground, literally a guy came running out of the office to greet us. He was so happy to see us. I rolled down my window and he asked a couple questions about how, where we wanted to park and what our intentions were. And I answered a couple questions and he jogged beside the motorhome and guided us to an open spot, showed us where to park, how far in to pull to get a good level spot, and said, when you get all done, come on by the office and we'll get you checked in, because that's the attitude of a businessman dealing with a customer. You don't get that from the state. You're not going to see that from the state. Think about the last time that you dealt with someone who was employed by the state. Did they run up to your car and ask what they could do to help you? Well, you go to the DMV or the BMV or whatever your locality refers to it as, and you go over there. Do they run up to your car and ask you what they can do for you? Or do they give you a smart-aleck little look and tell you, fill out the form. You're in the wrong line. How do they behave with you? How do they treat you? You see, that's the difference. So, back to my point. To be against the government doing something, to be against the state doing something, does not mean you're against the thing. It simply means that that would be done, whether there's a state or whether there's a government or not. It would still be done if there's a market for it. If someone wants a campground, there'll be a campground. If the state authorizes it or if the state doesn't. If the state robs from someone to pay for a campground or if the state doesn't, there'll still be a campground. If there's a need for a national parks, there'll be a national parks. But without the state robbing someone to pay for it, what condition would the parks be like? Well, would they just dissolve, burn away? Or in Bob Schaefer's words, what was that goofy statement that he said? Let me find it here real quick. Would they go by the by? That's an odd one. I've never heard that before. Would they go by the by? Oh, well, he's old. No, Bob, they wouldn't, unless nobody wanted them. If nobody wants national parks, they would go by the by. But if people want parks, they will exist. And I kind of get the impression people like parks. So you know what? There'll be parks. Whether you go to some old lady in the middle of Kansas and stick a gun in her face and tax her and take her money away, even though she's never been to a national park and will never visit a national park? Is that good, Bob? Is that what we should do, Bob? Should we go to children who have no chance whatsoever because they're poor in inner city? And should we rob from their parents to pay for a national park so you can sit your fat butt in one? Is that what we should do, Bob? Should we rob from people so that you can feel comforted in your park, Bob? Or should we let people who want a park pay for a park? What's better, Bob? Robbing people and then building what you want? Or letting people decide what they want and it happens because the market makes it happen? Which is better, Bob? Anyway, back to my point. So you see the difference here. People like this cannot be convinced because they're entirely detached from facts. They cling to the state because it's their God, it's their religion. This is not a matter of logic. It's not a matter of explaining to someone and showing them facts. It's a matter of breaking a mythology. It's a matter of shattering a God. When you're talking to someone about the state, and it's one of these people like Bob Schaefer and like the millions of others just like him, you're not talking about logic and you're not talking about examining facts and figuring out the truth. You're talking about that which they cling to with all their being because they think their existence is based on it. And they're exactly backwards. The state exists because they believe in it. And as long as they believe in it, it will exist. I'm going to cut it off there, because otherwise I'm just going to go into another rant about stopping believing in the state and it'll vanish. So that wouldn't do any good, because I've already done that on pretty much every single podcast. Folks, thanks for listening. If you have any feedback for me, drop me an email, ben@badquaker.com. Drop by the website. If you're listening to this on iTunes or subscribing, stop by the website every now and then. And maybe even if you want, scroll down there to the bottom of one of the articles and drop a note or just say hi or whatever. Or if you have any input on the website itself, email badquaker@badquaker.com. And as always, for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye.